Hey, this is Tom Cundit from Portugal.net and you're listening to the Seleção Podcast.
Bem jogado por Simão, a passar por dois adversários, Simão, a tentar oferecer o golo a Figo, e a bola é gol! O golo da Figo!
Rui Costa vem, acreditou, vai tirar para o golo, atira, golo! 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 Golo!
And welcome into episode number 12 of the Seleção Podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. Thank you so much for checking us out once again, whether it be via the Apple Podcast app or podcast.com or however you are listening to us on any of your listening devices and your podcast apps. We really, really appreciate all the love and support you guys have been giving us since the inception of the podcast a few months back. We've been getting nothing but positive feedback and positive reviews, and we really, really greatly appreciate you guys checking us out each and every episode. We have a great show lined up for you for episode 12 as we have tracked down Nathan Motes. Nathan Motes is a freelance writer from here in the States, but he has done a lot of work with Portugal.net with Tom Cundit, who you just heard right at the beginning of the episode. So he's done a lot of work with Tom, including two books that we will discuss with him. The 13th chapter, of course, the latest book with him and Tom and Simon Curtis, as well as A Journey Through Portuguese Football that he and Tom and Ben Shave and Vasco Mota Pereira worked on, and that came out about 5-6 years ago. Really looking forward to hearing what Nathan has to say regarding the matches, the friendly against Croatia, as well as the first ever UEFA Nations League match versus Italy. So, without further ado, here is my interview with Nathan Motes right here on episode 12 of the Seleção Podcast. And without further ado, we have our latest guest here on the Seleção Podcast here on episode 12 of the show. Thank you very much for everyone who has been tuning in and leaving reviews and leaving comments on our social media, whether it's been on Twitter, on Instagram, or on Facebook. But this is a gentleman that we've been chasing since the beginning of the Seleção Podcast, birth, for lack of a better term. But we have Nathan Motes, who is a freelance writer, but does a lot of work for the websites such as Portugal.net. With Tom Cundit. He's also worked with Tom Cundit on two Portuguese books. One is the 13th chapter, which is the first ever English language history of the Seleção. He did that book with Tom Cundit and Simon Curtis, as well as A Journey Through Portuguese Football. Once again, working with Tom there, along with Ben Shave and Vasco Mota Pereira. You can follow Nathan at Nathan Motes. That's N-A-T-H-A-N. M-O-T-Z. Nathan, that's a long intro, but well worth it, my friend. Thank you very much for joining us on the Seleção Podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me, Danny. I'm sorry it took me so long to find the time to sit and chat with you.
Well, let's make sure it was worth the wait, Nathan. What do you think about that?
That sounds great. Thanks.
Well, first off, I'd like to get started with a lot of people that have come on the show, whether it be Tom, whether it be Eric Krakauer. Being in the States as we both are, we're so far removed from Portugal and from the Seleção in terms of a daily kind of following and getting information. So my first question is how did you become someone who's been following, Portuguese football and the Seleção and writing about it?
Well, it was a long time in developing. The beginning would have to go back to pre-2006. I had essentially no history at all, not only with Portugal, but with the sport of football entirely. I had no interest in it, never watched it. I'm an American, as you can plainly hear by the way I'm speaking.
I thought your accent was pretty good.
I know, you know, it's like, no, but it's not in my heritage, you know, that sport. You know, in America, most kids play soccer when they're young, and as they get older, they move on to more American sports like American football or basketball or something like that, which is kind of what I did also. But then 2006 came along, and for some reason, I can't really say why, I chose to watch the World Cup in Germany, just to sit and watch it on TV. It was during the summer. I was in a break from college, and I decided to watch the tournament. And the Portuguese national team was just they were just the showpiece in that tournament. What a talented squad we had, and how exciting every single game was that we played. And it just seemed like every time I watched them, you never knew what they were going to do. They created chances like crazy, and they could almost never finish them. You know, it was just unreal. You know, it was so exciting. And they had this player, you know, that we all know now, whether you watch, you know, football or not, and Cristiano Ronaldo, who was just doing just some ridiculous things with the football that, you know, me not being familiar with the sport, I was transfixed by that. I couldn't believe someone would be so audacious as to even attempt those things in a professional match, let alone pull them off, you know. And he was just unreal, you know. And so after that tournament, I started watching a lot of football, and I realized that I liked the strategy and the tactics. I liked the way that the players seemed to think about the game, the way that they positioned themselves in the field. The different styles they employed, and of course, watching Ronaldo play at that time for Manchester United was just a joy. I mean, anyone who watched him during that era surely would agree with me, whether you care about Portuguese football or not. And so from there, my interest in Portuguese football was born. A few years passed, I found Portugal.net, started making comments on that website. And Tom one day just sent me an email and asked me to write an article. I did that, and my interest in the sport and in Portuguese football just took off from there, and it reached kind of a level that certainly has surprised me. I'll just say this openly: there's nothing particularly special about me at all. I have no training in sports journalism. I am not a cultured student of the game necessarily. I'm a hobby student. I read a lot of books. I like to write, of course, but the manner in which I've developed kind of this interest in Portuguese football and in the sport itself is peculiar. I'll admit that openly.
We're talking with Nathan Motes here on the Slesson podcast. As you're listening to episode 12, my name is Danny Pinto, your host. Nathan, I think the way you just explained how you came to follow the Seleção and to become a fan of Portugal and of the game of football. I don't know, man. That to me, that's something that not a lot of people get an opportunity to be either inspired by or influenced by. You know, normally you have something like a background, like you mentioned, like you're not Portuguese. So even on top of that, the way that you used, I think the word was transfixed. I don't know, as both a fan of the Seleção, as someone who is Portuguese, I welcome that. And I love hearing stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, I think it's interesting because, or at least what I have heard is that I'm not the only average Joe American that, you know, fell in love with Portugal at that tournament. And I think that there were quite a few people that, you know, that were maybe already fans of football, that after they watched Portugal, it just became just, you know, so in love with the notion of this tiny nation doing these great things on a football pitch, you know. And that resonates with a lot of Americans, you know, kind of an underdog story.
Sure.
You know, that's something that in our culture we appreciate. I think a lot of cultures appreciate that, in fact. But so Portugal at that time. You know, this is before Ronaldo took over the world, of course. But but in that time, you know, Portugal were really looked at as just this almost like Iceland is looked at now. And that's kind of interesting to think about, because now, you know, Portugal, you know, especially since Euro 2016, is thought of very differently.
So let's get to the field here, Nathan. And we just recently had matches against Croatia, a friendly against Croatia, who obviously were the World Cup runner-ups in the latest World Cup, and then the first ever UEFA Nations League match for Portugal, a victory against Italy. What were some of your thoughts that you came away with from those two matches?
Yeah, I really liked our performance against Croatia, you know, and they're being destroyed by Spain 6-0 in their UEFA Nations League match a few days later. Kind of took a little bit of the shine off that, I think. But given their performance of the World Cup, Croatia was a very talented team, really tactically sound, a really good contest for us. And the fact that we were able to try out what was a really kind of unique conception of Portugal there with Ruben Neves and William Carvalho there in the center of midfield, and you know, work on that formation, and obviously without Ronaldo as our cutting edge, to still perform the way that we did, was a good performance. And then the game against Italy was even better. You know, I think the way that we controlled that match from start to finish was exactly what we would want to see without Ronaldo. Granted, if he had been in the squad, you know, you'd like to see us score a few more goals. Maybe it's a little bit disappointing that we still haven't seen emerge, you know, that player that can assume some of, let's just say, the selfish risk of trying to score a goal, you know, the way that Ronaldo does. And we're going to need that at some point, even before, you know, Ronaldo retires and moves on. We need attacking players to be able to demonstrate their ability to hit the back of the net. But all things considered, solid performances. I think that we grew even in between the Croatian-Italy game, and kind of like honing the formation a little bit, getting the roles between especially Neves and Carvalho. I'm a midfielder when I play football, so I really like focusing on midfielders. So I like watching on the midfield tactics and just seeing the arrangement, how they play off each other. We've never tried to employ two defensive midfielders like that next to each other from start to finish, and see how that can orchestrate the attack and protect the back four as well. Except in matches where we want to protect a lead, like say for instance against Hungary at Euro 2016, I remember we had William and Danilo out there for about the last 15 to 20 minutes of that match to protect the lead. But I'm wondering if Santos is going to maintain that formation going forward. But I liked what he did with it against Croatia and Italy.
What were some of your thoughts on the squad that Fernando Santos did choose? And were there any certain performances that caught your eye, whether in a positive or negative light?
Now, João Cancelo, I think, is the player of the moment that everyone's talking about. I just watched him today, in fact, play against for Juventus against Sassuolo, and he is just in a moment right now, is kind of the only way that I can say that. He was the man of the match against Italy. I think the way that he is linking up with Bernardo Silva in particular just makes his usefulness to this squad even more noticeable, because Bernardo Silva is not the type of player that will provide you with width. His natural instinct is to come inside on his left foot. He doesn't want to get wide and go to the byline like a natural winger, because he's not a natural winger. You know, we talk about this all the time. The man is the central midfielder, and he's not being employed that way by Santos. But interestingly enough, when he's paired on that right side with Cancelo, you don't notice as much, because when he is cutting in, Cancelo's going on the overlap, and so we still have that width. We still have the ability to kind of get behind the back four with Cancelo's speed. He's really skillful at that. The only danger, of course, being that, you know, it leaves us a little bit exposed to counterattacks, but he managed to work on that in these last two matches. And I thought in the two matches, he was probably the revelation if you want to say that, the best player. But also, I think Bruma was really good, particularly against Croatia. Not so much against Italy. But having said that, he was positionally sound. He didn't make any mistakes with the ball. That put us in a bad way, which is, you know, occasionally when you get these young players in the pitch, you put them out there for the first time, they make some bad decisions, and it puts the team in a bad way, and they can't recover. But he did really well, considering he hasn't had a whole lot of involvement with the senior squad. Andre Silva really struggled against Croatia, but it was really, really nice to see him come back and get that goal against Italy. And I think that's going to do a lot for his confidence, because after the Croatia game, he really looked frustrated. And we definitely need, as I've been saying, a player to be able to take some of that goal burden off of Ronaldo. We just haven't had it. Defensively, I think Ruben Dias was solid. Mauro Rui was actually pretty good, too. And everyone was talking about Cancelo. Rui, as a left back, coming in for Guerrero, who's just, you know, perpetually injured, and had, you know, by all accounts, a fairly indifferent World Cup.
I wouldn't call it indifferent. I ringed him pretty good, and I know he's dealing with probably still not fit, but how much of that falls on him, how much of that falls on Fernando Sanchez is for another discussion. But I kind of ripped him a new one in some of these episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. It was shocking a little bit, I think, for most of us, because, you know, he played so well in the Euros when he was fit again, but it was frustrating to see him come out against, you know, especially Morocco. That game in particular was just shocking, and I think that's the game that everyone's going to remember from now on, especially if Mario Rui can come in and continue to play the way he did in these last few matches. People are going to only remember Guerrero for maybe how horrible that match was, maybe not for some of the good things he did. That's a little bit maybe hard on him, but the reality is, I think Rui, if he continues to play well for Napoli, he's going to have a chance to hold down that left back spot based on how he did. Bernardo Silva, we talked about him a little bit. He's trying to find his role in this team out wide. It's a little bit different, I think, for him than it is when he plays for Pep Guardiola and City. But having Cancelo out there with him to, you know, get forward on the overlap really helped him out. He had some good chances at goal. I'd really like to see him finish a little bit better, but I thought he was good. We still haven't seen a lot of the players who were involved at the World Cup participate, because they either haven't played for their clubs, like, say, for instance, Gonçalo Guedes, or they're just out of form or had a bad World Cup.
Yeah, and that's something that that we'll obviously be looking forward to seeing, especially the next squad that gets called up next month for the match against Poland. Before we move forward, Nathan, what are your thoughts on the UEFA Nations League overall? Is it a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Is it too early to tell? What do you think?
I mean, if you're just looking at social media and the reaction to it, I think generally speaking, it's positive. I mean, you're always going to have people who just kind of get upset about adding more competitions when maybe they feel there's already too many. But I think generally speaking, people are like the fact that UEFA has made an attempt here to kind of group nations according to their maybe respective capabilities, put them in a more kind of competitive setting here, you know, with some of the, you know, like, let's just say the minnows competing against each other, and then the heavyweights competing against each other and seeing what happens. And then the fact that they've linked in the opportunity to for example, qualify for, you know, the European Championship, it just makes it that much better. You know, they have a promotion relegation thing going on. I think it's exciting. I don't really have any problem with it, and the fact that it's going to take the place of some of the friendlies that, you know, normally are not very competitive. I don't see how this could be necessarily considered a bad thing. I think it's great for our players to be in another competitive environment like that and have a chance to play in a more meaningful match.
We're talking with Nathan Motes here on the Slesson Podcast, episode 12. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us once again. Nathan, what are some of the storylines, as someone like you who covers the team for in a variety of ways, what are some of the storylines, like Seleção storylines, Portuguese league storylines? We have Wolves in the EPL with about, I would say, 90% of the population of Portugal playing for them. What are some of the storylines that you are looking at in the next few weeks and months that we as fans of the Seleção and Portuguese football should be looking forward to?
Yeah, we just a lot of young players still trying to come to grips with new club environments, I think, is kind of a theme. And then there are also some players who, they're a little bit older, have some experience, but they are in a difficult club situation that may degrade their ability to continue with the Seleção. For instance, João Mário and his situation at Inter, he was recently dropped for the Champions League squad for Inter. He has not played a single minute, to my knowledge, of the season yet. And he's kind of been a hallmark in midfield. He over the last few years, he didn't have a good World Cup. And so for a lot of people, maybe they're thinking good riddance. But some of the qualities that he brings in midfield, I do think are really important. Just the raw energy and tenacity, the ability to carry the ball forward when he's at his best, something that Portugal does need in midfield. And interestingly, in the last two matches, Fernando Santos moved William Carvalho up into a more advanced position while keeping Ruben Neves more the traditional holding midfielder, just to see what William could do, carrying the ball forward. And interestingly, William he's really, really good at keeping the ball and moving forward. So much to the point that Tom Kindert calls him the Velvet Tank. so that's, which is an apt name for him, I think. But anyway,
absolutely.
That's one story. Certainly the Wolves situation and seeing how Ruben Neves evolves. I really think he is going to be a special player. And just seeing him compete in the Premier League is something we've all looked forward to. We knew he had the ability. When he moved to Wolves last season, the concern was, can they actually make it to the Premier League? Well, he's there. And today, I would say he probably had his best match for them that he's had so far this season. So for me, he is going to be a cornerstone in our midfield for a long time. And his story and the way that Wolves team develops, with João Moutinho providing, the veteran experience there is a really important case as well for Portuguese fans to follow.
We're talking with Nathan Motes here. You can follow Nathan on Twitter at Nathan Motes. That's NathanMotz. Nathan, before we let you go, we also wanted to talk to you about your work. And we mentioned in the intro, you worked on two books regarding Portuguese football. One was A Journey Through Portuguese Football that you worked with Tom Kundert and Ben Shave and Vasco Malta Preda, and also the 13th chapter, which is the first ever English language history of the Seleção with Tom and with Simon Curtis, who, by the way, and no, this is not a reflection on anyone I've had on this show before, but Simon Curtis has the best Twitter handle in maybe the world. You can follow Simon Curtis at Bifana_Bifana. I mean, that pretty much says it all. But what was your involvement, and how did you get involved with both of these projects?
Yeah, so A Journey Through Portuguese Football was just sort of a collection of content that we decided to put into a book to cover the 2012-2013 season of kind of the Portuguese football story, if you will. And we had in the book not only a detailed description of what happened in the Portuguese league that season, which was the, if people remember the season in which Benfica were winning the championship right up until the, I think it was the 92nd minute when Kelvin scored for Porto to steal the title away. The cover of that book is actually the picture is the scene where Jorge Jesus is on his knees and You see, you know, the Porto manager is celebrating. You know, it was an iconic moment.
You know, Nathan, now I kind of realize why I haven't picked it up yet.
and that did kind of upset a lot of people, of course, that picture. Yeah,
but it's fine.
But it's you know, it had a detailed account of, you know, the goings on with the Seleção that year. Detailed some of the work of, you know, Jose Mourinho and some of the Portuguese managers. It was just kind of a collection from a number of different authors. I think we had something like 10 different authors contribute to that. Moving ahead a few years, before we embarked on a project that I'm most proud of, I think, so far in my writing career, which is the writing of the 13th chapter, Tom and I had, you know, by that point, we had attended, you know, Euro 2012. We had gone to Euro 2016. We had interviewed a lot of players. We had written a lot of articles. We had a good following. But we both recognized there had never been written any kind of history of Portuguese football in the English language. And it just seemed, given, you know, Portugal's performances in major tournaments to that point, the caliber of their players, the caliber of Portuguese managers at that time, it just seemed a little bit absurd that, you know, there still was no, you know, concrete, you know, comprehensive history. And so when we looked at the content that we had, especially with Tom's website, Portugal.net, we immediately saw an opportunity to do something really special. And then, of course, when we went to Euro 2016 and covered that tournament, and they went and won the stupid thing, I mean, it just, you know, it just made it. I mean, we had to do it. You know, we had to write that book. And I think I'll just kind of speak for myself when I say that, you know, the reason we wrote it was not just so much for professional achievement. It was we saw an opportunity to bring together, you know, the passion that a lot of people wanted to take part in, to have documented, chronicled, you know, for posterity, and to annotate it in the English language in a way that resonated with these people, you know, all over the world, who maybe have lost a little bit of connection with their Portuguese roots, because maybe they live in Switzerland, or maybe they live in Canada or in the United States, but still have such a strong connection with the Portuguese national team. And we wanted to do something special, write something special for them. And so we feel like in the process of, you know, collecting interviews with players at past tournaments, and including real interviews that we collected with the players, and just injecting some of our experiences of our travel, and tying all that together for the first time and documenting Portugal's tournament history, we were really proud of what we accomplished, and we're happy to share that with people. It's my proudest moment as an amateur journalist.
Well, there's nothing amateur about either of those projects, and there's nothing amateur about your passion, Nathan. It's one of the reasons why this podcast was created. It's a passion of mine as well. And getting people like yourself and Tom and others that we've had on the show who share that project, and for someone like you, and I got to be honest with you, man, I'm so blown away by how you came about it, and how, just for lack of a better term, how all in you are on Portuguese football, on the Seleção, on the history of our country in the sport. I just can't thank you enough for coming on, and for all the work that you do and that you continue to do, and just can't thank you enough for joining us on this show and being a great ambassador for English speaking Portuguese fans of the Seleção and Portuguese football.
Yeah, you know, and trust me, it has enriched my life greatly. Some of the things that I've been able to do, the games I've been able to watch, the players I've been able to get to know, and you know, it's mutual benefit. You know, I've enjoyed what I've done, and I've enjoyed some of the benefits of that as well. And I'm looking forward to more in the future. You know, Tom and I are already gearing up for hopefully a Euro 2020 run. So we'll see how that pans out. But that's the plan, is to cover that tournament in detail as well.
Well, again, Nathan, I can't thank you enough for joining us on episode 12. You guys, give Nathan a follow on Twitter. Just great stuff from him always. At Nathan Motz, that's NathanMotz. If you get a chance, send him a nice tweet. Let him know that you enjoyed his interview here on the Celestone podcast. Pick up his two books, A Journey Through Portuguese Football and The 13th Chapter. You can get those on Amazon and Amazon UK. Just a wonderful experience having you on the podcast today, Nathan, and I can't wait to talk to you again down the road.
Hey, yeah, me too. Thanks so much for having me.
I can't thank Nathan enough for coming on the podcast. He's been one of the guys that I had been following for a while, as someone who yearns for an English speaking point of view, English speaking coverage of the Seleção. But truth be told, and I told him this when I first brought him on in our pre-show interview, I didn't know he was American. I thought he was from he was either from England or maybe from Sweden or something. I had no idea that not only was Nathan from America, he was actually born in California. I believe he was in Louisiana at the time of our call, but. Yeah, I was shocked at that he was an American writer, because nothing that I had ever seen, and I've been following him for a while, said that he was in America or from America or was born in California, or just never saw that he had set up shop and was setting up shop always from the States. So that was a great surprise, and I mean, what's not to love about the way he came across our Seleção, just the 2006 World Cup. Portugal was voted the most entertaining team of that World Cup. And for someone who is not Portuguese, for someone who does not have soccer, who does not have football in his background, for him to not only, pick Portugal, choose Portugal as his team, but if you guys noticed, he said we, he said our, he said us throughout the interview. He may not have the Portuguese blood running through his veins like myself and a lot of us that listen to the podcast and who tune into the podcast. But let me tell you what, man, that guy right there is as Portuguese as they get. He is Portuguese through and through. And I am proud to call Nathan Motz a brother at arms, um irmão, in this love that we have for the Seleção and for Portuguese football. So I can't thank Nathan enough, and I can't wait to have Nathan back on this podcast very, very soon. That will do it for episode 12 of the Seleção podcast. We will be coming at you sometime next month in October as we prepare once again for UEFA Nations League action, as Portugal will be taking on Poland next month. We'll have a rundown of the squad that Fernando Sanches will choose to field during that next phase of UEFA Nations League soccer, Nations League football. So we will have a breakdown of that roster and a preview of the game, as well as a review of the game as well. Make sure you guys are always checking us out on Twitter at @SeleçãoPod, on Instagram at @SeleçãoPod, and of course on our Facebook page, facebook.com/SeleçãoPod. If you're on iTunes or on Apple Podcasts, podcast.com, any way that you can rate the podcast that you're listening to, give us a 5-star review. Give us a 100% review if you wouldn't mind. All that support helps us in trying to develop this podcast into a bigger project than it is right now. Love to have this thing grow and grow as much as it possibly can, and with your support, obviously, that can hopefully happen. So again, can't thank everybody enough for tuning in, and a huge thank you to Nathan Motz for joining us here on episode number 12. Again, give him a follow. Let him know that you enjoyed his interview with us here on the Seleção podcast. Give him a follow at Nathan Motz. That's NathanMotz. And if you guys are able to, please pick up both of the books that he has co-authored about Portuguese soccer. A Journey Through Portuguese Soccer, he was a co-author with Tom Kundert, Ben Shave, and Vasco Mota Preta, as well as his latest project with Tom and Simon Curtis, the 13th chapter, the first ever English language history of the Seleção. Both are if you're a fan of the Seleção, those are two must-haves, and make sure that you support our English-speaking authors and journalists and media every way you can. So that will do it for us on episode number 12 of the Seleção podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. Thank you so much for joining us, and Força Portugal!